Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more? Check out my podcast. Hi, I'm Kadra, the host of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. I tell tales every single week that have left me perplexed. You'll hear true crime cases, mysterious disappearances, learn about cults, hear baffling sightings of cryptids, chilling paranormal encounters, and even dark and weird history. I release new episodes every Wednesday, and you can listen anywhere podcasts are available. I'm also on Patreon, and you can even watch me on YouTube. Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. Stories that will leave you perplexed.
In the shadows of history lies tales of unimaginable darkness. From the hidden atrocities to the sinister secrets buried by time. Join me, Rob Bradley, as we delve into the depths of humanity's dark past, uncovering the chilling stories that history hoped you'd forgotten. Prepare yourselves for the macabre and the mysterious as we journey through tales of tyranny, betrayal, and bloodshed. Discover the forgotten massacres, the twisted minds of infamous villains, and the haunting echoes of crimes that shook the world. This isn't just history. This is dark history. Join me in the exploration of the darkest chapters of our past. Listen now on your preferred podcast provider, if you dare.
Hey, freaky friends. It's Michelle and Melissa from the Freaky Fridays podcast. We are sisters in separate states and love to talk about all kinds of spooky, freaky, and scary shit while drinking and laughing through our fear.
Join us Fridays as we delve into everything from the world of the paranormal to scary movies to creepy stuff we find around the internet. Subscribe to Freaky Fridays wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Sleep tight.
Make sure you leave the lights on.
Freaky Fridays is a proud member of the Podmoth Network. For more awesome pods, check out podmoth.network.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us yet again.
Yes, thank you.
What story are you going to be telling us about today, Mom?
I'm going to be telling you about an ancient town. An ancient city and some weird things and theories that people have about it. Last episode we talked about an ancient guy that was found around the same time, incidentally, which I thought was interesting when I was listening to your story last week, from about 4,000 plus years ago. So this, some weird stuff. It was a big city at the time, so we'll get into it. What are you going to be telling us about?
I'm going to talk about the Texarkana Moonlight Murders.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, it's not.
Anything with murders, no.
And to go with it, I have Tito's Lone Star Lemonade. Ingredients are 1 ounce of vodka, 1 ounce of lemon liqueur, 1 ounce of sour mix, 1/2 ounce of agave nectar, 1/4 ounce of fresh lemon juice, and 1 lemon slice for garnish. Directions are to shake all ingredients in a shaker with ice. Pour into a pint glass with a sugar rim and garnish with a lemon slice. Sounds pretty good. You want to try, Mom?
Yes, I am excited to try this because I love lemon things. So we'll give it a...
That's pretty good. It's a little bit on the sweet side, I think. I think I'd prefer a little bit more like a soury... It's got tartness, but it's a little sweet.
So when you sent me this recipe, before I opened it, I saw it was a lemonade thing, and I was like, oh, okay, lemonade and vodka, sure, because it's Tito's. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at it, and I was like, oh, this is more complicated than what I had expected. And I had to go buy lemon liqueur because I didn't have any of that. And there's a lot of recipes that I've been looking at that have either lemon liqueur or limoncello in them. And I always kind of shy away from them because I'm like, I don't need one more thing on the bar because the bar is insane. You know how many bottles are on that bar. One of these days, I think I'll take a picture of the bar for our Instagram and post it. Because it's crazy how many bottles of different things we have
it's
on
impressive.
There.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I have been in bars, real bars, that have less bottles on their counters than we have. But I wasn't sure what to expect with this flavor-wise, and I really like it. I don't know that I've ever had anything with lemon liqueur or limoncello in it. I may have had like a lemon drop that had limoncello in it and didn't really pay attention. This is delicious.
We had limoncello in, was it Italy? Or
it would be
France?
Italy, but I don't remember drinking it.
I think it was like a little taster that they had. It might have been the airport, honestly. Like in the airport duty free or whatever.
Maybe.
I remember having a small sample of limoncello and not liking it. I remember it being super sweet, but this is like really good.
It's a nice
summer cocktail.
This is, oh God. I can imagine drinking this out on the back porch with my feet up, just sitting in the sunshine.
Yeah.
That's a damn good drink. I like
Might be top 10, that's for sure.
Yeah. I like it.
Okay, let's get into this Texarkana Moonlight Murders.
Can't be good.
It's not. Just a warning, it's not good. So, on Friday 22nd, 1946, Jimmy Hollis and his girlfriend Mary Jean Larry were headed to Lover's Lane after watching a movie together. They pulled about 300 feet past the last row of houses leaving town and started getting it on.
Okay, wait a second. Lover's Lane is 300 feet past some houses?
Yeah.
That's... No. It should be farther. I'm just saying. 300 feet is not
Being
far enough.
Being farther might have helped them out in this case. About 10 minutes later, a man wearing what looked like a pillowcase with the eyes... with eye holes cut out, was knocking on Jimmy's window with a big flashlight.
No.
He said, I don't want to kill you, fellow, so do what I say. He ordered the couple out of their car and for Jimmy to take off his pants. Once he did that, the masked man pistol-whipped him.
Oh.
Jean told the police that the impact was so loud that she thought he had been shot.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Crap.
Jean thought that he was robbing them, so she tried to show the assailant that they had no money, but As she was reaching for Jimmy's wallet, she was also struck in the head.
Oh.
The assailant told her to run. As he caught up with her and asked her why she was running, to which she responded, "You just told me to run." The attacker called her a liar and proceeded to sexually assault her with the barrel of his gun.
Oh, gross.
Yeah.
Oh, I did not.
Yeah.
I don't think I was after gonna hear that.
Okay. I told you it wasn't going to be good.
No. Okay.
After this, the attacker fled the scene. Jeanne ran to a nearby house and called the police. When the police arrived, the attacker was nowhere to be found. Both Jimmy and Jeanne were hospitalized for head injuries. Jimmy suffered from multiple skull fractures.
Mm.
On March 24th, Richard L. Griffin, who was 29, and his girlfriend of 6 weeks, Polly Ann Moore, who was 17, not the best relationship if you ask me, but...
Wait a second. Give me the ages again.
He was 29, she was 17.
Oh, no.
It was the 40s, so I don't think it was as frowned upon back then, but still gross.
It's still, yeah, that's gross. That's gross.
Yeah. So both of them were found dead in Griffin's car on the morning of Sunday, March 24th by a passing motorist.
Okay.
Griffin was found between the front seats on his knees with his head resting on his crossed hands and his pockets turned inside out. Moore was found sprawled face down in the back seat.
Oh.
When police arrived, they found a large bloody patch of dirt near the car, suggesting that they were killed outside of the car and later placed back into it.
Oh.
Near the car was a .32 caliber casing. Both had been shot in the back of the head. At around 6:30 a.m. on April 14th, another body was found. So these are happening in pretty quick succession. The last one was on March 24th. This one was on April 14th.
Okay, so like 2 weeks.
About three weeks. 2 or 3 weeks, yeah.
Oof.
17-year-old Paul Martin's body was found by the northern edge of North Park Road. He had been shot 4 times. As police were investigating the scene for potential clues, they stumbled upon Paul's girlfriend, Betty Booker. Her body was found about 2 miles away from Paul's body. She had been shot twice, once in the face and once in the chest.
2 miles is a long distance.
She was posed. Yeah, like, it's kind of hard to explain. So he was going to pick her up from a band recital, and okay. So they were walking together.
Okay.
But how did they get 2 miles away,
which is super weird. Yeah, that makes me think that she was driven. One of them was driven
somewhere else.
Or, like,
running or something, yeah.
2 miles, even if she were running...
That's
the
far
fastest
to, like,
she's running. I mean,
that's like
okay.
At least
the fastest runner,
15 minutes at most, probably 25 to 30 minutes,
depending on if she's a track star, she's maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah. She was posed with her right hand in the pocket of her coat. Both were shot with a .32 caliber Colt.
She was posed?
Yes, she was laying on her back with her right hand in the pocket of her jacket.
Weird. I mean, I could understand if she died that way, but...
Well, the previous murders, Griffith and Moore, they were both posed in their car.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Look, true.
Griffith was posed with his head in his hand, in his crossed hands.
Quit posing people. That's weird and gross.
It is weird.
Quit killing people. That's weird and gross too. Okay.
On Friday, May 3rd, sometime before 9 p.m., Virgil Starks, who was 37, and his wife, Katie, who was 36, were in their home on a 500-acre farm off of Highway 67 East. Virgil was sitting in the living room reading a newspaper when he was shot in the back of the head twice, with the shots coming from outside the home.
Shit.
Katie came running when she heard glass breaking and saw her husband dead. She immediately ran to the phone and dialed 911, but was shot twice before she could connect with them. She could hear someone running away outside, so she made her way outside and ran to the neighbor's house for help. The Prater family took Katie to Michael Mager Hospital. After examination, it was determined that a .22 caliber bullet was used for this attack. Oof. Which is different than the .32. Okay. This kind of was scenes? Confusing for police.
Okay, yeah. So they're thinking different calibers, different people, probably.
We'll get into that.
Oh. Okay.
So police struggled with finding a suspect for these murders, since Jimmy and Jan were the only victims to actually see what the perpetrator looked like. Jimmy described him as a tan white guy, while Jan described him as a light-skinned guy.
Okay.
The attacker had a clear motive of attacking young, secluded couples on the edge of town.
Except for the last pair.
Well, they were about 10 miles away from Texarkana. They were off the highway on a farm.
Right, but they're older too, right?
Yeah, 36. That's a little older than the... Because Griffith was the oldest before those attacks, and he was 29. Okay. So maybe they just looked young.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. Police believed he was a smart criminal with a lot of gun expertise, since he never left a crumb of evidence and was a fairly good shot. Dr. Anthony LaPala, a psychologist at the Federal Correction Institute in Texarkana, believed at the time that the killer was planning on continuing to make unexpected attacks, such as that of Virgil and Starks at the outside of town. He also believed that the same person committed all five murders, and that the killer was somewhere between his mid-30s and 50s, apparently motivated by strong sex drive and sadism. Throughout the investigations of the Phantom Killer case, almost 400 suspects were investigated. There were only a few key suspects that ended up not matching the description of the crime. However, UL Sweeney is possibly the closest they have to a suspect. Sweeney was a compulsive car thief who was arrested in July. At the Griffith and Moore crime scene, a previously stolen car was found near the scene, and a car nearby was reported stolen that same night. So someone came, probably ditched the car, if he is the murderer, killed them, and then stole a getaway car nearby.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. Police arrested Sweeney's wife, who confessed to the police that her husband was the killer.
Oh.
She was able to recall the victim's belongings and where they were placed, because there was a saxophone that the girl with the hand in her pocket, she was coming from a band rehearsal. So she had a saxophone. That's not something you just, you know, lose. But that was found later near her body. So it was found, and she knew where the saxophone was, which is...
Okay.
Strange, yes.
For real strange.
However, she recanted her confession and was deemed an unreasonable witness.
Okay.
Sweeney was never tried for murder, but later served time for habitual car theft. And no one was ever charged for the murders.
No. I knew this was going to be...
Yeah.
Like an unsolved...
Well, I think it's pretty unsolved. Easy to tell for me. I think it's easy to tell when I'm going to do... It's going to be an unsolved one, because usually I start with the killer's childhood.
That's
if
true.
We know who the
That's
killer
true.
Is. So if I start with the victims, it's fair to assume that
it's unsolved.
They probably don't know who did it.
Valid point.
Yeah.
I don't like unsolved.
No one does, but
I know.
Some, well, I guess some people do. I'm not a huge fan of them either, but
yeah,
sometimes I gotta be told. Because as a serial killer, it's not like, oh,
yeah,
little Betty Sue got murdered and no one ever right. figured out who no did it. Knows. But it's like five people were murdered, two were attacked.
Wow. Yeah. I don't like it.
Let's hear about this ancient civilization story. So, maybe that'll cheer us up.
I don't know. It's going to definitely make us go, what? There's some questions here.
Okay.
So in the Indus River plains of South Asia. I'm going to start that over because I'm having issues. In the Indus River plains of South Asia, in an area that is modern-day Pakistan, sits an interesting archaeological site that was once an ancient city. The original name of the city is unknown, but it is currently called Mohenjo-Daro, which roughly translates to Mound of the Dead. Have you heard of this?
I think I heard this on Rogan.
Yes. That's where I heard it too. That's why I was wondering if you had heard it.
I was going to do this story, but I couldn't find enough information on it.
Because I
couldn't figure out how to spell it.
Yeah, like, so
I spent 30 minutes just trying to find any story about it. So I'm glad you did it.
So I did some digging and I found some stuff. And
okay.
Yeah, so I was wondering if you had heard about this because I know we both listened to Rogan and
oh, maybe I'm thinking of a different one because I thought this one took place in somewhere in like Africa over by like Iran and shit like that.
No, this is in like South Asia.
Okay, maybe
currently Pakistan.
Maybe it's something different.
Could be.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So when I get to like when I get to it, you'll be like, oh,
we'll get into
you
might, it. Yeah.
If you've heard about it from that episode that we probably both listened to, you'll be like, oh, okay. So the city was rediscovered, and I say rediscovered because obviously it existed before and nobody currently knew about it, but archaeologists found it modern day, and I say modern day in quotes, because it was originally, it was rediscovered in 1911. But an in-depth excavation started in the 1920s, so 100 years ago. It's believed to have been a thriving city built around 2500 BC. There were no exterior walls for protection, but it did have guard towers. So ancient cities often had like big walls around them because they were trying to protect themselves and the inhabitants from invaders and things like that. But this one didn't have that. It just had a few guard towers around the perimeter. The city was large for the time at about 500 acres or a circuit of about 3 miles is what I saw. At the peak of the city's existence, it might have had around 40,000 people living there, which is quite big
a lot
consider yeah 40,000 people all exactly all living in the same place. Mohenjo-Daro was advanced in its civil engineering and planning, having advanced water systems for both freshwater wells and sewage removal in the form of intricate covered drainage systems that lined the major streets. There are over 700 wells in the city that supplied fresh water to the people living there. The layout of the settlement was not haphazard, but more planned out with structures and roads in straight lines in a grid pattern. So it wasn't like they had one thing and then people just built like some huts around it or anything like that. It was like straight lined roads in a grid. The buildings were mostly rectangular in shape and were made from sun-dried mud bricks and wooden superstructures. So like the foundation was mud bricks, and then there would be wood structures built on top. It had two sections, the citadel and the lower town. The citadel district was the area of town that had common use areas like town meeting halls, a central marketplace. There was a large public bath, which is currently known as the Great Bath, because we're not original and we can't think of fun things to name it other than the Great Bath. This was a bath structure similar to more famous Roman baths, but it predated the Roman baths by over 2,000 years.
Oh, wow. Which,
yeah, pretty significant time difference.
Long time.
There, yeah. So the Great Bath was 8 foot deep, 39 feet long, and 23 feet wide, and was lined with a form of waterproofing material similar to asphalt. A large well adjacent to the Great Bath supplied the water used in it. There's a large building referred to as the Great Granary. Some researchers believe that the granary was used for the purpose of drying and storing grain, thus the name the Great Granary. Again, not very original, people. Come on.
Yeah.
However, other researchers deny that the Great Granary was actually used for storing grain because there's no evidence that's been found.
There's
that
no
grain
pollen
actually,
or anything in there.
Right. There's no ancient evidence of grain being stored there. So, I mean, there's like rooms, like one big room that they thought was for storing the grain, and then smaller rooms with like ventilation that they thought was for drying out the grain. But they've taken samples and there's no actual grain found.
No evidence. Okay.
Right. Who knows? The lower town was essentially the residential region of the city, consisting of multiple homes per block. There were many smaller wells in the lower town, with each well serving, on average, three homes. Most homes had small bathrooms with drains and sanitation, which is interesting to think about a house from 4,000 years ago having a bathroom in it.
Yeah, it wasn't just like a hole in the ground.
Well, there it was, but like there was actually drainage that led to so
like
that
irrigation
could,
underneath.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Your poop would just wash
I
down
guess.
River or whatever.
I don't know. The bathrooms had drains for sanitary purposes.
That's pretty advanced for the time.
Right. Again, 4,000 years ago. Many of the homes also had stairwells, indicating that a second story or usable roof area was present on the homes. So stairs inside that led up, either people were like hanging out on the roof for like fun times, which I wouldn't be approved. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't disapprove of a rooftop bar. That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Or they had like a second story to the house. They don't really know. There are several large raised platforms, which many researchers believe might have been used during times of flooding, because there is evidence that there had been repetitive flooding issues in the town. In fact, there may be a reason that may be the reason the city was eventually abandoned by its inhabitants. Although it is speculated that up to 40,000 people lived in the city, only around 40 skeletons were located there. Archaeologists don't necessarily agree on why so few people were found in the large city. And I say people meaning their skeletons. Some people believe that there was evidence of repeat flooding by either the ocean or a shifting of the path of the nearby Indus River. This would have caused a majority of the people to leave and look for better living environments. I mean, if you're living in a town and it just keeps getting flooded over, after a while you're going to be like, let's go find something that's not getting covered in mud all the time, you know. However, other researchers believe there was some type of large-scale massacre that occurred that caused the sudden deaths of the residents that were defending their homes. So instead of like everybody just slowly leaving, they think that something massive happened there and a bunch of people died. Many of the skeletons that have been found were in contorted body positions, which leads the researchers to believe that those remains were either were possibly thrown into some type of burial pit. However, no weapons or fighting materials have been located near any of the skeletons, and none of the remains have any evidence of violent injury. So if there was some type of an invasion and people were
killed,
there'd be like
broken skulls and shit. Yeah.
Right. There would be some injuries.
Arrows and people's
exactly.
backs or whatever. Yeah.
Like last week when you were
like
talking
Otzi.
About
yeah.
Otzi, and he had an arrow in his shoulder. Obviously, arrows existed 40,000 years ago in the Alps.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they have existed in, you know, the plains around the Indus River? But there's nothing. Like, there's nothing to say
just
why
a bunch
these people
of dead people
died.
That's
it's
weird.
Just people died. But again, there's only 43-ish skeletons. I think it was 43. I've heard 43 and 44. So around 40 in this
okay.
town that could have housed 40,000 people. Yeah.
That's weird.
There have been some very confusing other findings that some researchers completely deny the existence of. Here's where we get into like the really like some weird stuff. I mean, it's weird that 40,000 people and now only 40 skeletons have been found. But one researcher reported finding a skeleton in the city that tested very highly for radioactivity. The level reported was 50 times higher than the normal background level of radioactivity.
Jesus.
That's
this motherfucker was damn near glowing.
Right. Right. Another strange findings were items that had been turned into glass, also known as vitrification.
Mm-hmm.
The items were pottery and bricks that had been turned to glass. In order for something to be turned to glass, an extremely high level of heat is needed.
Yeah.
In the range of like 4,000 to 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, making glasses, you have to have a very high pressure torch and shit like
yeah,
that. Like
big heat.
Using like a pure oxygen torch. Yeah. That,
right.
It's very hot to make glass.
Yeah. The archaeologists that found these items believed it was evidence of a large scale explosion, like that of a nuclear bomb.
That's not good.
Of course, the question is how an ancient civilization from over 4,000 years ago could have invented or experienced anything reminiscent of a nuclear blast. It's 4,000 years ago.
Yeah, they didn't have nukes back then.
No, you wouldn't think so.
They barely had toilets, it sounds like.
Valid point.
Yeah.
Maybe they were more interested in creating nuclear blasts and nuclear weapons than they were toilets.
Taking comfortable shits.
Right. Yeah. They're like, it's a bucket. Just poop in a bucket and take it outside and dump it in the in the sewage drain. Natural occurrences of such high temperatures could have existed with a volcanic eruption, but there's no evidence of any volcanic activity. Like, nothing in the area.
There's no,
there's
yeah,
no
pumice or
no,
shit like
no,
that. Yeah.
No soot, no nothing. There's no other evidence in the area that would lead researchers to understand what could have caused the objects to turn to glass. Skeptics of the radioactivity of the radioactive skeleton believe that there was a misinterpretation of a text that has led to the confusion and that no abnormal radioactivity has ever been found at the site. So they basically, the skeptics of that skeleton finding say that some, like one of the researchers wrote something and in his native language, and then because of differences in how words are interpreted across languages, that he didn't say it was radioactive at 50 times, but somebody else read it that way because they didn't understand his language as well.
Okay.
That's part of their argument, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how legitimate that is. I don't know. There are some religious texts from the region that discuss what some claim to be a description of a blast in which the sun became so bright that it was like 50 suns, while another text describes an iron thunderbolt from an angered god that brightened the sky. So researchers believe that this was the ancient people's way of explaining an extraordinary event that was unbelievable to them. And so they're going back to like these religious scripts and texts that they're talking about gods and, you know, godly things. And they're like, oh, in this one section, they talk about how there was all of a sudden the sun was 50 times brighter, or the sun was like all of a sudden there were 50 suns worth of brightness. And they think that that was them describing this event that caused the radioactivity and the vitrification of the objects. Strange.
Very strange.
Yes. Suggestions of what actually happened here range from an alien scent bomb. Some people actually go, oh, the aliens sent a bomb back to, there were aliens that encountered these people 4,000 years ago and something happened and they sent a nuclear bomb. Other people suggest that it was an extremely advanced society that actually did have the technology to create things like nuclear bombs, and that the fall of that society was inevitable due to the level of destruction that they created. So they were basically saying there were super smart people 4,000 years ago that created a nuclear bomb. And the fact that they created that bomb wiped out civilization as we know it and made it go back to like Stone Age-y times.
Yeah.
That's their argument.
Hmm.
And that my problem with that is that there's zero evidence. I could understand like, okay, we created so many nuclear bombs that it wiped out society. But there would be some level of evidence
everywhere. Yeah.
Right. Prior to that, that would predate that bomb. And there's not.
I have a theory.
Okay.
I have a theory.
What is
so,
your theory?
You know, how, like nuclear bombs work by splitting an atom or whatever.
Uh huh.
I don't think that's how they actually work. That's just what we were told as kids. For the longest time, I was terrified that when I was cutting paper, I would accidentally split an atom and cause a nuclear explosion.
Oh.
So what if they
okay, what if someone I get what you're saying.
Finally accidentally cut an atom on accident.
Right. With a pair of scissors.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my theory.
That's your theory.
A thought though.
All right. Okay. There are, of course, skeptics who believe that there must be some natural explanation for the objects being turned to glass and the city that was merely abandoned because of excessive flooding made the area inhospitable to live. The city has been declared a World Heritage Site, and over concern to conserve the area, only surface surveys, salvage excavations, and conservation projects are allowed there. So basically they can't go in and look at, like, they can't try and unearth any new skeletal remains. They just can go in and look around at the surface. They're not allowed to dig or do anything drastic because things are deteriorating and falling apart on their own, and they're trying to conserve it and make it so that it will...
It should be studied longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they can only do it on the surface. Basically,
oh,
with non-invasive, But, you know, I mean, there's non-invasive research stuff that's going on today and learning, like, you know, they can penetrate the, like, the ground penetrating radar and stuff like that.
Radar.
So maybe they could use that. I don't know. I don't know if they've tried or not, but it's interesting.
That's super weird.
Right.
Yeah. I'm glad you found the stuff for that because I really struggled to find the information on that case.
Yeah. Well, knowing how to spell it, I mean, I kind of guessed at it and, you know, Google likes to suggest things on how to spell things. So.
Yeah.
But yeah. So do you have a chaser for us today?
I do. My chaser is a new game that I found. It's not new, but new to me. It's called Firewatch, and it's you play as a Firewatch, but some really weird things start going on. Like someone breaks into your fire tower, and like he finds out that his like radio with the other Firewatches has been hacked, so they can all listen to him, and like. Some hikers go missing. It's super, super strange and like mysterious vibe, but it's kind of cool because you can like, you're a fire watch and it seems like a fun job.
You're just sitting there looking for smoke.
Yeah, but then you have to like start hiking around because someone's messing with their radio and got to go. It's full of like twists and turns and it's a fun game.
It reminds me of the podcast that you recommended a few weeks ago.
Tower 4.
Yeah. Yeah. I started listening to it and I really like it. It's good.
It really makes the hair on your neck raise up.
Yeah. It's good. I dig it. I've been meaning to tell you that I started listening to it and I keep forgetting.
Yeah. It's pretty, like, it's almost the exact same. Not the same storyline, but the same feeling. Like you're in the game, you're a guy and the other person you talk to is a lady who's in charge of reporting stuff because you can't. Oh. It's like very similar.
I wonder if they're related at all. Like if the people that did the game like put out the pod
the script
or vice
or whatever.
Versa.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
What's your chaser, Mom?
My chaser is a new show that we recently binged on Netflix called Eric. And the description of it is about, I think it the synopsis of it was something about an investigator, a police officer is looking into the disappearance of a little boy who's like 9 or 10 years old. And I thought it was going to be... And it kind of is. It's kind of true crimey, but it's about, you know, this little boy who disappeared. I think it was 1985 is the setting of the story in New York. And there's a lot of other things that are happening, but I'm going to give a little bit of a spoiler, but the dad of the little boy, the dad has a show similar to like Sesame Street where he's running puppets and the little boy has an idea for a puppet and then he disappears and the dad starts seeing the puppet. So we're watching this show thinking it's going to be just about this, you know, missing little boy. And then to find out, you know, if he survived, if he ran away, if someone kidnapped him, what happened to him. But then it takes this weird turn where the dad starts seeing the puppet that this little boy created in his mind, who's like a monster puppet. And then he starts talking to it.
Oh, that's freaky.
It's a really good show. But it has this weird, like, psychological component where the dad's kind of losing his mind and interacting with this imaginary monster. But I do recommend it. It's a good show. It's worth watching. It's not all just about the dad going, you know, weird and seeing this.
Sounds monster. Interesting.
But neither your dad or I expected like the monster to be part of the story, and he is totally part of the story.
I'm gonna have to check that out then.
Yeah, it's good.
Well, I think that just about wraps up today's episode.
It does.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for your support. And if you would like us to give you a little shout out on an episode, please leave us a review on Apple and say nice things about us, because we'll say nice things about you.
Yes. All right. Love you, Mom.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.